Okay, Boker Tov, welcome. I think we can get started. It's 9:31 on my watch. Okay, I just want to thank Michael and Ilana Katz of Yerushalayim for sponsoring this year in the memory of Ilana's mother, Esther Bet Shmuel Halevi Himmelstein, and the Neshama should have an Aliyah. And as they say in the South African Minhag, they're South African, wish everybody long life. We should have good occasions to celebrate. Okay, what I want to talk about this morning is, was the Torah accepted willingly? So if I were to ask, you know, walking down the street and I bump into somebody and I say, did the Jewish people accept the Torah willingly? So you would answer. So you can type it in if you'd like. What would most people answer? Okay. They would probably give you, okay, why? Yes, they would answer yes, based on, of course, what we were taught in kindergarten and ever since, Nasa v'nishma. Those of you who are at the Rabbi Liebtai classes, and otherwise you should know, of course, that Nasa v'nishma, of course, doesn't appear till Parsha Mishpatim. It doesn't appear in the Torah. It may have happened before the Torah. That's clearly how the Medrash understands it, that pasuk, which is Mishpatim, happened before. But Nasa v'nishma is not said in the context of the Aseret HaDibrot. The problem with the Nasa v'nishma aspect is the Gemara contradicts it. And I'm going to share my screen, and then we can get right started into some of the sources for the shir. Right, there's a medrash, the mountain was hovering over their head. So that's what I want to talk about. Basically, the shir is going to be talking about resolving or not resolving the contradiction between the Jewish people accepting the Torah willingly and God had to hold a mountain over our head. And then we'll move on to discuss in general, when we do mitzvot because we're forced to do it or doing so because we want to do it. And there's I think a few interesting things relating to that topic. So I'd like to share the screen so we could see a couple of the sources inside. Okay, let's see. You tell me if it works. Okay, everybody see this? If someone just wants to yell out, I assume they can see this, right? Okay, I can't hear anybody, but all right. So the first source now, this is a Gemara in Shabbat. Shavuot, of course, does not have its own Masachet in Shas. There's a cute story on the Vilna Gaon that when the Vilna Gaon was a little kid, on the second day of Pesach, he picked up a Masachet Shavuos, and he's going to learn it before, he said he's going to learn, finish the Masachet before the holiday of Shavuot. So they kind of like chuckled at him and they said, no, you don't understand. Masachet Shavuot is not about the holiday of Shavuot. It's about taking a Shavuah. It's the laws of oats. So the Vilna Gaon, I don't know, it was a five-year-old kid, said, what, do you think I don't know that? Of course I know that, but we have a principle of Mushba v'yomet me Har Sinai. The Jewish people took an oath to observe the Torah at Har Sinai, and Masechet Shavuot, by coincidence or not, happens to be 49 blot. So I'm going to learn like a Sfira Sa'omer, I'm going to learn a blot a day in to finish the Masechet. Now, there is no Masechet, you know, Shavuot in general, in the Torah itself has been discussed in other contexts, is a purely agricultural holiday. There may be or hints in the Torah that it's the day we got the Torah, but even if so, the Torah doesn't make that a big deal. It's not a concern of the Torah. The Torah doesn't really care when we got the Torah, because we get the Torah every day. We don't want to limit it to one day, and therefore there's no mention in the Torah. Often mentioned that probably after the destruction of the temple and the exile of the Jewish people, it's very hard to celebrate an agricultural holiday in Babylonia or Poland or Spain. You know, the Shtei Halecha and Bikurim, it doesn't make any sense. So the rabbis, I don't want to say they made up, they took an aspect of the holiday that was ignored and neglected and made that the focus of the holiday because we have nothing else otherwise. So the holiday of and there are no mitzvot. The eating cheesecake is not exactly a mitzvah. And so there's very little on Shavuot. And of course, there's no Mishnayot. The Mishnayot talk on the laws of Shtei Alechem. There's no Mishnah. There's no Gemara. There's a couple pages in Masechet Shabbat which coincidentally or not, Daf Yomi will get to in 3 or 4 days. The Gemara's on Shavuot, we're just about there in Daf Yomi. So the Gemara here in Masechet Shabbat tells that Vayitzatzu b'tachti dahar amar avetimi bar chama bar chasa melamit shekapa kadosh baruch aleim at a har kigigit. It teaches us that God held up the mountain like a barrel, and he says, "Im mekavli matorah mutav." If you accept the Torah, that's great. Imlav sham take v'urtchem. If not, I'm going to drop it in your head, and you're going to die. Now, the first thing to realize is this is, of course, not at all the meaning of the verse. I mean, that happens all the time. It's not the pshat of the verse. The pshat of the verse is a very nice verse. Moshe gathered the people. They were preparing for 3 days for Kabbalah Satorah, and they stood eagerly at the bottom of the mountain. So the question is, why are the rabbis making such a drasha, which is not the simple meaning of the pasuk, but they, from the word tachtit, under. So the rabbis are interpreting under, God held it, instead of the Gmul Hahar, next to the mountain, it says Tachdit. Now, what I find fascinating, so this is a Gemara in Shabbos Pechet 88a. The following Gemara, it's like the next line in the Gemara. Don't believe me, open up your Gemara in Shabbat. Darish Rav Simai, I mean, Rav Simai made a drasha, Bishasha Kit, Hikdim Yisrael Naseli Nishma, when the Jewish people said Nasev Nishma, so 600,000 angels, because there were 600, and that's the number for Klal Yisrael, right? There were 603,550 males between the ages of 20 and 60 who left Israel, but the rabbis always, when they want to talk about the entirety of the Jewish people, say there's 600,000. So they came and they put on two crowns on the Jewish people. Every Jew wore a crown, Echad Keneged Nasev, Echad Keneged Nishma. Unfortunately, when the Jewish people sinned at the golden calf, it was the angels came. You needed twice as many angels. You needed 1.2 million angels. That's why only 600,000 to put it on and 1.2 million to take it off. That's for another time. But what I find fascinating, I'll stop sharing for a minute. What I find quite amazing is that these Gemaras appear back to back, and the Gemara makes absolutely no, doesn't raise that they contradict each other. In other words, and this is a general point in Agadah. In other words, normally I would expect the next line Gemara said, what do you mean? How can you say the Jewish people accepted the Torah willingly? We just learned Vayitzatzu b'tachdid ahar. We just learned that God held the mountain over the head. So which is it? The Gemara does not do that. And it's not like the Gemaras appear, you know, in a different masachet or 25 pages apart. They're mamash next door to each other. So why does the Gemara not do that? So I think, and it's as a general issue, and then our specific topic. In general, one of the basic difference between halakha and agadah is exactly that. Halakha, we need to come to a conclusion. Even if in theory, elu ve'elu divir Elohim chayim, even if in theory both Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai are correct, and there's an argument to do one way or the other, obviously in practice you can only accept one. We must reach a conclusion. So the Gemara is always going to be bothered by contradictions. Agadic text of whatever, however you want to translate Agada, stories, theology, philosophy. When the Gemara is talking non-legal aspects, the Gemara couldn't care less of contradiction. Every rabbi expresses their own view, and there's a long history, how binding is Agada, and can we argue on the, whereas generally we don't argue with the sages, halakhic matters. When it came to Agada, the Goni, many people, they're willing to reject Gemara's just out and say, we don't agree with this Gemara. But so the Gemara presents Agadot, that's part of the beauty. When it comes to philosophy and ideas, we're very open and multiple ideas, and all are accepted, even if the two ideas contradict each other. In other words, it makes no practical difference if the Jewish people accepted the Torah willingly or had it forced upon them. The bottom line is we have to keep the mitzvah of the Torah, whether we like it or not, whether we do it because we want to, whether because we don't want to. So the Gemara it's of no interest to the Gemara to resolve the contradiction, but I just find it startling that you have these two Gemaras back to back. Obviously, the editors of the Gemara, it wasn't the people who said, the editors of the Gemara put these two ideas next to each other. And I think, so that's in general. But I do think the editors of the Gemara are telling us something very, very, very meaningful. The first thing they're telling us that contradictions don't have to bother us. And I think we can all understand that all of us can for sure talk to ourselves. Parts of the Torah we accept willingly and parts of the Torah we don't accept willingly. There are parts that we do like, we don't like. That's just, I think that's to be human and to be normal. There are mitzvot in the Torah I would be very happy if they didn't exist. And there are mitzvot in the Torah, I think we do, they're so beautiful. I wish they were more emphasized in the Torah. So we generally we have a contradictory attitude towards the Torah, and I think the Gemara is expressing that by putting these two views next to each other. Now, let's go back to the screen. Okay. All right. Now, I said the Gemara doesn't raise these questions. The contradictions in Agadanu often throughout Shas find rabbis who contradict each other, and there's no discussion how to resolve the contradiction in agadic matters. In halachic matters, of course, there would be. So already Tosfot raises this question. It's very nice. The Gemara doesn't, but we want to resolve the contradiction. So on the page, Tosfot, we're talking, 12th, 13th century, France, Germany, Kapalem Harki Kigit, Vafal Pisha Kvar Hikdimu Nasev Nishma. Oh, what do you mean? The Jewish people already said Nasev Nishma. By the way, it's interesting, in the Talmud, the first Gemara is this sort of quote-unquote negative Gemara, that the Torah was forced upon them. And the second Gemara is Nasev Nishma. I don't know. It just perhaps the Gemara could have quoted the teaching of Nasev Nishma and then quoted, but that's not how they do it. They first quote the Gemara that we were forced to accept Torah, and then they quote the Gemara we willingly accept the Torah. So Tosfot, Tosfot doesn't give my argument that for this, we like this, we don't like this. If for some, we do accept, some we don't. Tosfot, of course, puts it as seemingly pshat in the Agada. Obviously, it's sort of all or nothing. Was the Torah as an entity accepted willingly, or was the Torah as an entity accepted only because God held the mountain of our head? So Tosfot says, how can this be? So he says, Shema yuchosri mishireisha gdola shietzta nishmatam. He said, you know what? The Jewish people accepted the Torah willingly. However, they were not, a few days ago. But when it actually came to the time to get the Torah, oh God, they woke up in the morning, or that's the problem, the Medrash, their famous Medrash, they had to be woken up in the morning, and that's why we stay up all night. But whatever, they got up in the morning, and there was thunder and lightning, and God is appearing. And we know already that according to Rashi, not all agree with this, but according to Rashi, the first two luchot were said by God, and then the Jewish people said, we can't take this, it's way too powerful, you speak to us. But Tosfot's saying even more. It's not just they wanted to hear the Torah from Moshe, they had second thoughts. The Torah is very powerful, and we know the greater the power for good, the greater the power for evil, right? That's the basic rule of life. Newton's third rule of motion applies in the physical world, and of course it applies in the spiritual world. Something, Torah is very, 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 very powerful. So Torah can be used to do wonderful things, and we know Torah can be misused. Chilul Hashem, people take religion and debase it, and it becomes a lot worse. So the Jewish people said, this Torah is too powerful for us. We don't want it. Yatsanish, we're going to die. Right, if we come too close to the mountain. That's what Tosfot says. Eshigla. So they originally, Tosfot claims, originally the Jewish people said Nasev Nishma, but later on they changed their mind, but it was already too late. Like they entered the contract, they said God, there was no turning back, unlike the other nations, according to the Medrash, who didn't have to accept the Torah. At that point, the Jewish people were stuck, and God had to hold the mountain to force them. That's the answer. Tosfot, it's very similar to something I think we spoke about it many weeks ago. One of the first yeshirim I gave, I believe it was here, where I spoke about on Kriyat Yamsuf. So most people, again, in kindergarten are taught that when they came to the sea, Nachshon ben Aminadab jumped into the sea. Nobody wanted to go, and he was the first one, and he jumped in, and that's great. And Shevet Yehuda, the leaders of the Jewish people. If you look in the Gemara actually presents a machloket. Again, because the Gemara, who does it really matter? There's no halakhic import. The Gemara presents an argument that the other view was all the Shvatim were arguing. We're going to go in first. Everybody's arguing Binyamin jumped in first, and that's why the Beit HaMikdash, part of the Beit HaMikdash, is built in the share of Binyamin. So what was it? Either Yehuda jumped in first or Binyamin jumped in first. Either they wanted to go or they didn't want to go. So that's what some of the Mefarshim, I mentioned the name of Rabbi Dr. Aaron Levine, my Zatzal, who's my teacher at Yeshiva University, a tremendous Talmud Chacham, really the founder of the field of Jewish business ethics. So he explained that the same idea. Before, 10 miles before the Yom Suf, they were, everybody's going to jump in. Of course, we're so excited. How can we not do this? But when they got there, they got cold feet, you know, literally. You go first, you know, it's okay. I don't mind if you go first. So that's the same type of thing over here. We say things all the time. We're excited to do them. But then when it comes to actually, you know, there's responsibility and it's a commitment and it's every day. The Torah is not, you know, when you feel like it, when you don't feel like it, it's even every day. So they backed out. Okay, very simple answer. It's very understandable. And I'm sure it's very, very true, of course, in many ways. Now, the Medrash Tanchuma here, which I think is a little bit less famous, and it's interesting, of all places, it's on Parshat Noach. So, Noach, you know, according to Chazal, Noach already the Avot, and even Noach kept parts of the Torah, and with the animals that he put in, the kosher animals more, the less kosher animals less, whatever. So the Medrash says, "V'lo kiblu Yisrael Torah shekafa aleihem HaKadosh Baruch Hu har kegigit." We learned that the rabbis say that the Jewish people had to be forced. Shenemar v'yitzazu b'tachtit, underneath the mountain. V'amar Rav Dimi Bar Chama, that's our Gemara. Amar lema kadosh baruch hu mekablim et haTorah mutav. Great if you get the Torah. If not, you're dead. Vim tomar la Torah shebichtav kafar lema tahar halov shishamei shomar kibli lema temet haTorah. So he says like this. He says it cannot be that God forced the mountain on us. Im tomar, if you want to say that it's on Torah shebichtav, that cannot be because on Torah shebichtav it says nasa v'nishma. But what is it? Ela amar lema Torah shebalpeh, that the Jewish people were not willing to accept the Torah Shebaal Peh. So Torah Shebaal, it's a very different, very interesting distinction. Torah Shebichtav, the Jewish people, Naseh V'Nishma, great, God, we'll accept what you want. Torah Shebaal Peh, that's not for us, and we're not going to accept it, and that had to be forced. And it's interesting how the Tanchuma explains it. Mipnei She'ein Batzah Yigiyah Batzar V'Himat. Torah Shebichtav, it's easy. Torah, you know, you can read the Torah in 3 hours. Okay, you know, it's not so long. And how do you keep Shabbos according to what it says in the Torah? I'll stop sharing for a few minutes. If you just have the Torah Shebichtav, you can eat a cheeseburger. You just can't eat a kid cooked in its mother's milk. You can eat it. I'm sorry, lo tevashel. If somebody else cooks a kid in its mother's milk, you can eat it. You can't cook it. And if you want to cook a cow and it's not its mother's milk, eat it. Gesunta hate. Keep Shabbos? Easy. What is it? Don't light a fire. Don't give me all these 39 milachot. Torah Shebichtav, it's easy. Ein ba'yigiyah. It's not hard. Torah Shebichtav, the rabbis drove us crazy. This law and that law, and they have new interpretations and new things. We're talking about tefillin. Who says you have to put on tefillin every day? What does that have to do with anything? Right? So that's how the Tanchuma understands it, that the we were slaves in Egypt. God comes. This is great stuff. Don't kill. That we can do that. Love your neighbors yourself. It's a beautiful idea. The social justice, helping people, beautiful. Stand before the elderly, respect people, beautiful. We'll accept it. But to learn Tafyomi and to go out of your mind with everything what the rabbis want to teach us, that they weren't willing to accept. So that's how the Tanchuma resolves the contradiction that the Gemara has no interest in resolving, that is Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebichtav. I'll add another idea, and it is related, and I think the Tanchuma doesn't say it exactly like this, but same concept, that the Torah Shebichtav, according to our traditional belief, was written by God. So the Jewish people were willing to accept what God said. But what the right, not so much whether it's hard or not, I'm getting a slightly different angle. But what's Torah Shebaal Peh? Torah Shebaal Peh is what the rabbis say, and we all know the famous Gemara, we can overrule God when it comes to, you know, Rav Elazar, and God can have a heavenly voice, and we don't care. Once the Torah was given, God, it's like you give a present, and the sages say the Torah is our greatest gift. When you give a gift, you don't have control on the gift anymore. So God gave the Jewish people a gift. He lost control over the Torah. God is happy about that. Nitzchuni banai, you defeated me. You made me eternal. But God no longer, so we don't necessarily follow what God theoretically wants. We follow what we want. So Jewish people, that's ridiculous. So that the Jewish people weren't willing to accept, if you want to understand the Tanchuma that way. What God says, of course I'll accept. But who are the rabbis? Now, of course, this argument we have all the time, maybe not in traditional Jews so much. But I don't have to tell you, throughout history, the Sadducees and the Karaites, and always through history, there are people who didn't accept it all. And then the modern world, of course, modern world is a little bit different. The modern world, the attack wasn't so much just on the oral Torah. There was a little bit of that, but it was an attack. I don't know. It was an understand. They had the Torah isn't God given. They changed even Torah Shebichtav. The Reform movement did away with much of the Torah Shebichtav too. So it was it wasn't just an attack on the Torah Shebaal Peh, but you have that a lot. And I mentioned, one of the posts I wrote recently, in the 19th century, there was a flourishing of biblical commentary. The Malbim and the Netziv and the Ketav Kabbalah and the Meshach B'Chochmah going into the early part of the 20th century and the Torah Tumim, and all of these commentaries have one thing in common. They all wanted to link the oral and the written law, the Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal-Peh. They wanted to show where's the hint in the written law to the oral law. This is like a new phenomenon, all of a sudden flourishing in the 19th century, because they felt the oral law that was under attack and the rabbis had made it up. So they went to work to show, no, there's an extra word here, and that's how the rabbis derived this law. But the Tanchuma is basically making a very point. People are willing to accept, people are willing to accept what God says, but whatever, why should I listen to a rabbi? He's no better than me. I can check out on Google, the internet, who needs rabbis anymore? I can look it up all myself. And remember, the Torah Shebaal Peh is ongoing. When the Tanchuma says they didn't want to accept the Torah Shebaal Peh, it doesn't, it's not just at a one-time event. Torah Shebaal Peh is in every generation. We're figuring out how to use electronics on Shabbos. And believe me, it's changed a lot. The views, even we're not quite up. Somebody sent me this week, he said he will send me this week, the conservative movement just came out with an official tshuva, if you want to call it that. I haven't seen it, allowing Zoom, minyanim on Shabbos now. It's not that's what some of the Israeli rabbis were allowing before Pesach. Our whole understanding, things do change. Rav Nachum Rabinovich, who recently passed away, great, posek, one of the really leading poskim, ruled that you can use all those cards in hotels, when you go to the fancy key cards. So nobody has keys in a hotel, and it's okay, you can walk and the doors will open automatically. Those are not problems on Shabbos. That's not for our discussion now, but the idea is that the oral law is evolving in every generation, and that is hard for some people to accept. Isn't the Torah fixed? Who are the rabbis to interpret it and sometimes to change it? And in a certain sense, and when there was a Sanhedrin, they could change interpretations of the law. So that's how the Tanchuma understands it. What God says directly, we hear 10 commandments, that we're in. But what the rabbis have to say, we're out. Okay. All right, let's move on to another idea here. There's a fascinating, Rav Soloveitchik, I want to teach you a piece, Rav Soloveitchik. I don't know where it is online. I listened to it when they had tapes. Who remembers what a tape recorder is? So driving in the car once, I listened to this phenomenal shiur of Rav Soloveitchik, and I want to just go over just one small part of the shiur. It's I won't say it as beautifully as he did. Okay, the first verse introducing the Aseret Hadibrot. Vayedaber Elohim ekol hadvarim ha'ela lemor. And God spoke, or was about to say, interesting, what's called remelu, all these things, lemor. So what's difficult in that pasuk, right? What word is difficult in that pasuk? Since I can't see the chat screen, somebody has to yell it out if they want.
Lemor.
Why is it difficult? Why is the word lemor difficult in that verse?
It's superfluous.
It's always superfluous. Vayedaber Hashem El Moshe is also superfluous. Vayedaber Hashem El Moshe, that's fine. What's Lamor mean? So I mentioned this a few weeks ago. The word Lamor in biblical Hebrew does not mean to say. Every English translation, I think, translates Vayedaber Hashem El Moshe Lamor, and God spoke to Moshe saying. Well, obviously, if he spoke to Moshe, this is what he said. I don't need that. The word Lamor is to tell other people. God spoke to Moshe to tell over to the Jewish people. There's certain things you're not supposed to tell over. When somebody tells you something, it's a secret. As a matter of fact, the Beis Halevi has a whole explanation. The Nasi picks up on this, the idea that originally Torah Shebaal Peh was not supposed to be talked to everybody. The Torah was supposed to be very limited in a sense. And just, we don't have the right to teach everything. It was only later that this whole idea, the expansive nature of Torah, that's the difference between the first and the second Luchot. That's how they explain. But the word lemor is you have permission to speak over, permission and obligation. Otherwise, it's lashon hara. So the problem is God is speaking here. It's not, in other words, it's not God speaking to Moshe to say, God is speaking. So who's responding? Who's saying something? What's he saying? In other words, I have to speak. Somebody has to respond and say something. So that's why Rashi has the comment lemor. In other words, lemor. This comes to teach us when God gave the Ten Commandments, the Jewish people said on yes, yes, on no, no. In other words, I'm the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt. Yes. Don't have other gods. No, no. Yes. Zachor yes. Lo tirtzach. No. Lo tinap. No, of course not. Lo tignov, no, we would never do that. That's how Rashi says. Melamed onim al hein hein v'alav lav. On yes, yes, on no, no. Now this Rashi is like most of Rashi. Rashi was a great, please don't misunderstand me, but Rashi was a great plagiarist. If you quote all your sources, then it's all research. If you don't quote your sources, it's plagiarism. Rashi, of course, the greatness of Rashi, he picked and chose Midrashim. There's not so much, in the Talmud, it's all original. That's why people say really his commentary on the Talmud was more trailblazing in a sense. His brilliance in the Chumash is not so much of what he said, it's what he chose, what to say, when and what. So Rashi's always quoting from Midrashim. If you, those who had the pleasure to learn with Nechama Leibowitz, who loved Rashi, came out, more than anything. She so meticulously would discover why does Rashi only quote half a Midrash? And see, why does Rashi sometimes quote a Midrash on a different verse than the Medrash quotes the verse on? Why does he quote this? So if you look in the original source, which of course I have been kind enough to show here on the page. So this is actually a machloket in the Medrash. Lemor, Shayu Amrim al Hein Hein v'alav lav. That's the part that Rashi quotes. On yes, yes. On the positive commandments, the Jewish people answered yes. On the negative commands, they answered no. Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. That's Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva, they are Bar Pluktas arguing all the time. Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva. Omer al Hein Hein v'alav Hein. On yes, yes. And on no, no. In other words, when God said lo tirtzach, they said yes. They didn't say no. They said yes. God. So on all 10 commandments or 14, however many commandments, however you divide them, whatever, they answered yes. According to Rabbi Yishmael, the positive at yes, the negative at no. And according to Rabbi Akiva, the everything at yes. And we would read this medrash and ignore. Like, who cares? Like, what in the world? It's yes, no, who cares? The Jewish people were accepting the Torah. Yes, we won't do it, or no, we won't do it. It's the same idea. I know the words are opposite, but obviously in the context, it means the same thing. And then why does Rashi only quote one view? Why? So Rashi's like, he's paskening, like he's quoting like the view of Rabbi Yishmael. He's not quoting the view of Rabbi Akiva. By the way, you should know, in general, the famous machlok of Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva is whether the Brat Torah kills Shom B'nai Adam, right? We're all famous that Rabbi Akiva dorish every et in the Torah, right? Shimon Amsoni was doing every et, and then he stopped because he came to the pasuk et Hashem Elokecha tira, and you should fear God. What do you mean and you should fear God? Et, always at something. So my whole thesis is wrong. It's wrong. It doesn't kaved et avicha ve'et imecha. The et is, it's just a manner how we speak. Doesn't have any significance. And then Rabbi Akiva said, no, 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 no. That we just sort of were saying, our Torah scholars are like God. They can also interpret the Torah. They can also add things to the Torah. They give their input to Torah. You have to honor, you have to be in awe of Talmidei Chachamim, just like we're in awe of Rabbi Akiva. And we know the famous story when Moshe went up to Har Sinai and God is putting the little notes on top of the letters, and Moshe goes to the Beit Medrash of Rabbi Akiva because God told him there's going to be this great sage who's going to be Doresh called Tel Vitel. On every little line on Torah, he'll make a drasha. I remember Rav Schechter once pointing on the shir, we don't have one drasha, not one, in the entire Talmud that Rabbi Akiva derives something from one of the crowns. It's very nice medrash. We don't know of anything. Well, what did Rabbi Akiva be Doresh and call Tel Vitel? We'd have no idea. The truth of the matter is, in many ways, we accept the view of Rabbi Yishmael that Divrat Torah Kol Shom B'nei Adam. Rabbi Yishmael doesn't get excited about extra words. The Torah speaks like man. The Torah is written for man, and it speaks in manners. I mean, the Ibn Ezra goes so far, you know, the Nechama Leibowitz really didn't like this. But let's say the story with Avraham, Avraham's, you know, servant finding a wife for Yitzchak. So the story is told twice. Why does the Torah write? The Torah loves the Sicha of Avdei Avot, but there are about 20 differences. And Nechama Leibowitz points out how beautifully, how every difference is such a deep meaning. And Ibn Ezra said, no big deal. Just when you tell a story twice, you never use the exact same words. It's impossible. You're not going to use the same language. So when the Torah repeats a story, it repeats a story. It doesn't have to be the same language. So there is an approach like that. It's not the approach we're used to necessarily, but that's the approach of Rabbi Yishmael. But the question is, what are they arguing about? Like, who cares if they said, I'll hain hain, I'll love love, or I'll Alhein, alav lov alhein, yeah, yes. In other words, what difference does it make? This year? So Rav Soloveitchik beautifully explains that God said, don't work on Shabbat. So we can answer two ways. We can answer, of course, I would never work on Shabbat. God, you told me, how can I work on Shabbat? Impossible, I will never work. Or he can say, all right, God, I won't work on Shabbat. I really want to work on Shabbat, but I will not work on Shabbat because you commanded me to. Yes, no is not like what they said. Yes, no represents an attitude towards the Torah. Do I willingly do what you do? Or are you, okay, no, I won't do that. Or I wish I could do that, but God, if you say so, yes, God, I accept your authority. So with Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael, are actually arguing about, according to Rav Soloveitchik, is this this idea, do we have to accept the Torah willingly or not? Just let me go back here. And Rashi is quoting the opinion, Melame Shamrion Hain Hain Valav Lav, on yes, yes, no, no. In other words, they accepted it totally willingly. Whatever God says, if God says yes, we say yes. If God say no, we say no. It's not if God says no, we'll say, okay, God, yeah, I hear you. I won't listen. But Rabbi Yishmael tends to disagree. So that's where salvation develops. It's a beautiful idea. And in that little Rashi on the word lay more, meaning when God spoke the Ten Commandments, we answered, lay more. There's got to be a response. So there's a machlok, was our response yes or no on the negative commandments. Now this idea is probably more famously known in the Rambam. And I want to point out something I think quite fascinating, or one idea that's for our time, you know, an important discussion. Okay, so in the Shmona Prakim, these are the eight chapters, called the Shmona Prakim, eight chapters, written originally in Arabic, like everything the Rambam wrote except for the Mishnah Torah. We spoke about language last week in our Pirkei Avot here. So the Rambam has an introduction to Pirkei Avot. And in it, he discusses the view of the philosophers, and then he discusses the Jewish view. What's greater? So there is a principle in the Talmud, the greater the person is, the greater his yetzer hara. You know, that the greater you are, the more the temptations are greater. It's harder to resist. We know that's true in the area when people have power, if you want to look at that aspect of gadol, right? Obviously, they have more yetzer hara, more ability to do things that are not right. But it means the rabbis were meaning more Torah sages. Don't think that Torah sages don't have a yetzer hara. Maybe because the Yetzer Hara works harder, right? The Yetzer Hara loves to get people who are great to make them fall. Or it's the nature. Like we say, goodness and evil have to go together. For every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. So the greater you become, the greater your potential to do evil. So the greater the Yetzer Hara. So the Rambam is discussing what's greater. Ezu ha-gibor ha-kovesh et-yitro. So what's greater, to destroy your Yetzer Hara, to eat non-kosher food? Like, ugh, who can eat lobster? Disgusting. Or, no, I want to eat lobster. So part of this Rambam is well known. But so the Rambam here quotes, V'omram Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, lo yomar adam. Our tradition, unlike the philosophers, our tradition is, a person should not say, I don't want to eat meat and milk. You should want to eat meat and milk. I'd love to eat meat and milk. I don't know why such a great desire, but I'd love to. I don't have such a desire to wear shatnes. I want to wear, maybe because shatnes are expensive. Most suits that are shatnes are very expensive. So I want to be able to afford a $3,000 suit that's probably going to have shatnes. You should say, great, I would love to do that, but what can I do? If shar lubush shatnes. This is the Rav Yishmael approach. If shila boa le'erva. You shouldn't say, I don't want to have relations with that forbidden person. So I find this fascinating. Oh, we'll come back. I want to eat non-kosher food. I want to wear shatnes. I don't want to have an affair, or maybe not an affair. I want to move in with my boyfriend or girlfriend, or my male friend, my same-sex friend. Ela efshi, I want to do that. Ma'aseh b'avisha b'shamayim gazarlai. What can I do? God in heaven tells me not to do. I want to eat non-kosher food, but I can't. Okay. That's what the attitude one should have. Now, we'll get back to this in a moment. I do have it in English for if you want to print it out. Okay. So then the Rambam says that's not true always. It's only true occasionally. It says, Shamisha lo itaveh yochal chashu mimishi itaveh, right? So some say whoever doesn't have a desire is greater than those who do have a desire. That we said isn't true. When do we say that? When do we say you should not have a desire to do something bad? When famous things that every normal human being knows they're wrong, that you should have no desire. Kishvicha damim, murder, gzela, theft, gneva, thievery, quietly, you know, white collar crime. Gzela is blue collar crime or whatever we call it. You know, you mug somebody. Gneva is white collar crime. Ona'a, oppression, lazik lemisha lo heralo, to damage somebody who did you no harm, likmo ra lemeitav lo, to do bad to people who've done good for you, libazora aim va'aim, not to belittle your parents, kayotze belu, those mitzvot, you should have no desire. A person shouldn't say, I really would love to steal, but I won't, it's against the law. That's not good. That's not good. So Ram says, we don't need a Torah for these mitzvot. Even if the Torah hadn't said them, you have to keep them. These are the logical mitzvot. So in the logical mitzvot, we're not supposed to have a desire because our logic should be. Now the Rambam is saying actually a very fascinating point, really, I think, a very important point. The Rambam is saying that the goal of the Torah is not to keep the Torah. That's not the goal. The goal of the Torah is to be a better human being. And being a better human being is not to want to steal. In other words, it's not that, what's the ultimate goal? To keep the Torah. No, the Rambam is saying, I don't need a Torah for this. I have to keep these, not because it says so, and who cares what it says in the Torah. I have to keep these mitzvot because it's wrong. Murder's wrong. I don't keep gzeila. I don't not steal because the Torah says so. I don't steal. That may be true. Listen, the person who would steal but doesn't steal because it says so in the Torah, okay. Baruch Hashem. But the reason I'm not supposed to be stealing is not because it says so in Torah, because it's not right. And that's, I think, a very important point. We lose something. The Torah sort of, the goal isn't the Torah. The Torah has a goal. The Torah's goal is to make us into better human beings. And therefore, we should not have a desire to steal. Now, of course, in real life, I think I'll talk for myself. I have much more of a desire to cheat on my taxes than I do to eat a cheeseburger, unfortunately, or whatever. In other words, I try not to cheat on my taxes. That's a terrible thing. I try to be as honest as I can, but I hope I'm, you know, as honest. I don't know, 100%. I try. But, you know, if I could get away with it, if it was nice, if, you know, whatever, I don't have, I think Jews who grew up, I have zero yetzer hara to eat non-kosher food. Like it, you know, it's just like, I don't have any yetzer hara to violate the laws of Shabbat. I love Shabbat. So it's interesting. It's hard. It's Rambam's hard because most of us, I think we do have desires. We don't have so much desire to eat non-kosher. Maybe a balchuva, perhaps. Somebody grew up eating lobster. They tell me it's very good. So I understand for them, they can really observe this. But I think somebody grows up, I think maybe you're different. But that's what the Rambam says. When it comes to these mitzvot, geneva, gzela, those mitzvot, we should want to do them because they're the right thing to do, not because God says so. We said this, we spoke a few weeks ago. This is the famous reason, or I'll get that in a second, why there's no bracha on staka. Because I don't, generally, mitzvot between man and man, there are, we don't make a bracha. You know, if I give, so the classic case is I write a check for $100,000 to staka, I don't make a bracha. Why not? The Rambam says that stuck is the most important mitzvah to say in the Torah. That's what the Rambam says. It's the Zera Avram. It demonstrates that we are descendants of Abraham. The Talmud says we are kind and merciful and bashful, and that's the trait of the Jewish people. And God chose Avram because he knew we would teach his son Yitzchak staka umishpat. That's what it says in the Torah, in Parshat Vayera. So staka is the defining trait of the Jew. The Rambam says it's the Zera, it proves we're Zera. It's the most important mitzvah. So why don't we make a bracha? Because I don't want to make, I don't give you tzedaka because it's an obligation. I give you tzedaka because it's the right thing to do. The Torah makes it an obligation. You're right. Many people give charity because they're forced into it. Business dealings, fine. All right. At least they're giving it. It's still good. But ideally, I'm not giving you tzedaka because it's a mitzvah in the Torah. I'm giving you tzedaka because I care about you. I'm empathetic. I understand. I have gratitude. I appreciate it. We became wealthy in North America. Yeah, that's Bill Gates, the great person, Bill Gates, one of the great people of our generation. So Bill Gates, the giving pledge, because him and Warren Buffett, because we owe it back. We were blessed to live in America at a time where we could become super, super gazillionaires, and we're going to give it back. So not because it's any mitzvah, not because it's an obligation. It is a mitzvah, but that's irrelevant. Now, what I find fascinating, and I'm sure you picked it up, I sort of stopped there, is the Rambam includes arayot. And those mitzvot that are not natural, are not like stealing. In other words, the mitzvot everybody agrees is bad, murder, theft, that we all know. But not included in there are sexual sins. The Rambam puts arayot, if you notice, with the sins like shatnez, kashrut, arayot. I think that's a fascinating point. It's right there in the Rambam, if you don't believe me, because I'll show it to you again. I think, let's just see that again, not that you don't believe me, but it's always, it's striking to see it inside. The first time I read it, it really struck me. A person shouldn't say, if sharlecho basar v'chalav, if sharlevo shatneis, if shilavo al ha'erva. You shouldn't say that. You should say, I want to do a sexual sin, I just can't because the Torah doesn't allow me. So that, that's basically the question, that say an attitude towards homosexuality, that it's not inherently wrong. It's wrong because it says so in the Torah. In other words, the reason we keep kosher, the reason we don't wear wool and linen, is not because it's inherently wrong, because it says so in the Torah. And that's what the Rambam, that's the way I read the Rambam. Maybe other people read it differently. So the Rambam would include, let's say, something like, which is, of course, big on the agenda today, something like homosexuality would be defined as something that's not inherently wrong, like stealing. If two consenting adults, what does it bother anybody? Now, I would find it extremely difficult, and I don't think the Rambam would mean it, he can't, that it would apply to adultery. Because adultery is not only a sin, bein adam lechaveiro, it's bein adam lemakom, it's also a sin, bein adam lechaveiro. So that's a different type of a thing. But the Rambam doesn't actually make that distinction clear. I think it's obvious, but the Rambam doesn't make that distinction. But the Rambam basically distinguishes between the mitzvah we should want to do and the mitzvah we shouldn't want to do. So now we're not discussing so much what did the Jewish people accept willingly, the mountain was forced on their head, wasn't forced, but we're discussing how we should look at mitzvot. And from the word lemor, hein, love, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel have a machloket. Rashi only quotes one half of the argument, but did we accept the mitzvot because we are obligated to, or should we accept the mitzvot because we have to? And these arguments, some of those opinions, they don't make the distinction of the Rambam. That's the Rambam's distinction. The argument Rabbi Akiva Yerushalmi on all mitzvot lo tase, they don't appear to distinguish, unless the Rambam wants to interpret them in those words. It's the Rambam who makes the distinction, and even the most famous distinction, between those things that are obvious and those things that aren't obvious. I just want to pick up on what I alluded to before on staka. What I said, that we don't make a bracha on staka, I think I may have mentioned this at some time. I mean, I've mentioned it over the years. I don't remember the last time I mentioned it, any of these Zoom shiurim. Let's go here. Okay. So the mitzvah of staka is basically written twice in the Torah. It's sort of written, it's allusion to, but the actual mitzvah to give tzedakah is written twice. The more obvious one is what we lay on the second day of Yontif on Sukkot, and the Aser Taser part on Shmini Atzeret. In Parshat Re'eh, where the Torah talks about Shemitah and all the law, and then it culminates sort of the notion of tzedakah, I shouldn't harden my heart, I shouldn't close my fist, I should give you mani epes ki lo yechab avyon, there are always going to be poor people. And that really seems to be talking about what we call, you write a check. I mean, I don't know if they wrote a check back then, but you give money, you give food, you give actual tzedakah. And it's in the context of Shemitah there, which of course is a mitzvah of tzedakah. The poor can come into your field during the year. We all know that the higher level of tzedakah is to give a loan. And that's in Parshat Yimishpatim, im kesef talve et ami. And the way the Torah phrases it, it's like when you get married. You know, the Torah is no mitzvah to get married. It doesn't have a mitzvah to get divorced either. The Torah is a mitzvah that if you divorce your wife and she remarries, you can't remarry her. In other words, the Parsha, it's fascinating. That's, again, for another shiur. The Torah says, ki kach ish ishu ba'alaf, a man takes a woman and he lies with her, and then he doesn't like her, and he writes her a sefer kritut, he writes her a bill of divorcement, and she goes and marries another woman. He cannot remarry her. If she's not married, he can change his mind, unless he's a kohen. But he can change his mind. They can get remarried. That happens not so irregularly. I mean, not all the time, but it happened. But if she's married, they can't play musical husbands and wives. That we don't allow. So the Torah tells us about marriage and divorce, and it's from those verses that we derive the laws of marriage and divorce. But the Torah is not talking about marriage and divorce, really. The punchline of the Torah is this wife swapping kind of thing, go back and forth, that the Torah is prohibiting. It's just interesting. It's the notion is the similar. Im kesef talv enemy. The Torah is not talking about the mitzvah to give a loan, right? That's sort of what happened. If you give a loan, im kesef talv enemy, imach lo ti elo keno sheva lo tiksimu lav neshach. You cannot charge interest. In other words, it's not, the Torah is not writing to tell us to give tzedakah. The Torah is writing, when you give a loan, which we later interpret as the highest form of tzedakah, do not be like a creditor. Don't charge him interest. And of course, we do charge interest, but that's a whole other discussion, heteriska, and that's because today it's loans today are very different. Everybody needs interest. You couldn't live. It helps the poor to have interest. So the rabbis divide this is, again, we don't accept this Torah Shavuot Pes stuff, right? That's, we want to go back to, you know, what do you mean? The rabbis said, are you crazy? It says in Torah, don't charge interest. And rabbi said, you can't charge interest. We don't call it interest. We make a business deal, right? So, but basically the rabbis are changing what it says in the Torah. That's exactly what the Tanchuma is saying. The people weren't willing to accept the oral law. What are the rabbis making up this stuff for? But we live by the oral law. So im kesef talvet ami, if you lend money, but the Rashi already quotes, Rashi famously quotes, this is one of the three im's in the Bible. That doesn't mean im. It doesn't mean if, it means when. It means when you lend money. Why? Because there's an obligation to lend money. A Jew is obligated to lend money. That's the highest form of tzedakah. And if you can give it so he can go to school and get an education and get a job, he'll pay it back. Wonderful. That's a higher than giving him charity. But the Torah doesn't say that. So Rashi tells us, you're right, the Torah's focus is on interest, but you should know this is not an optional case. It's obligatory. So then, of course, you have to ask, so why does the Torah write in? It's very nice. It's very nice. The rabbis may make this up, but where do we get this from? Why doesn't the Torah say what it means? So the one answer could be, well, if you can't afford it. It's true. The mitzvah is optional. As many people, you're not allowed to give any charity. The rabbis made a takana. It's a rabbinic decree. The Torah doesn't have that. It was after the destruction of the Second Temple. There was an economic collapse. You can imagine what the Jewish poverty situation was like after the Bar Kokhba revolt. And the Jewish people, even in most of many people not living in Israel, those living in Israel, exiled up north. So the rabbis made a takana. One who wants to give away charities, it's illegal. It's forbidden to give away more than a fifth of your money, because people, apparently there were poor people who were giving away a lot of money. People sometimes, what do I need it for? So no, you need it. Baruch Hashem, where the poskim are makil, if you're Bill Gates, or not even Bill Gates, you have a thousandth of Bill Gates, you only have $100 million. So you can still give away 90% of your money. No prohibition. That one-fifth is for normal people, not talking for, I don't want anybody to misunderstand, but that's a rabbinic decree not to give more than a fifth. The Torah doesn't have the Torah doesn't say, it says aser taser, but that's not on staka. That's on masrot. And if you're not a farmer, you don't give masrot. The mitzvah of staka doesn't have a definition. And the truth of the matter is the Shulchan Aruch doesn't, the Rav Yosef Karo paskins that you have to give as long as people are in need. Oh my gosh. In the ancient world, I understood you didn't know people halfway around the world. But in today's world, it means you got to give away, except so you can have two meals of herring a day. Like, you have to give away everything. That the Rav Yosef Karo says, as long as there are people in need, you have money, you have to give it away. The Ramah, thank God, or whatever. We don't paskin like that. Even today, we don't. That's a fascinating question in philosophy. People suffer in the world, and we go on vacation. Okay, now we don't go on vacation, but please, God, soon we'll go on vacation. Right? We don't feel that's wrong. The halach is you give away 20. Normal people give away 20%. Very wealthy people should give away more. But our obligation, it's not an obligation to fix the problems on the world. We have to do our part. But if everybody gave 10, 20%, we wouldn't have any poverty. So we don't have to give more, unless you're very wealthy. Bill, you know, you can give more. Anyways, so the rabbis put the limit. Im kesef tal v'adami. So why does it say im? So those who can't afford it. But the Maharal, maybe some of you have heard this before, but it's a beautiful idea. The Maharal says, the Maharal Miprag in his commentary on Rashi, says the Torah wants you to give your money willingly. We don't give tzedakah because it's a command. The Torah doesn't say give tzedakah. It says if you happen to lend some money, I should give tzedakah, but there's a tremendous difference between someone who's forced, you know, gets called and he has to do it, and you give to my organization, I'll give to your organization. You know, that's how it works very often. And the business, you come to my dinner and I'll buy a table at your dinner, whatever. Okay, it works. It's better than nothing. You're doing what's right. It's a lot better than nothing, but it's not the ideal. The ideal is im. The idea is I want to give tzedakah. Of course, you should know. So Rashi's pointing out, don't think you can do what you want. You have to give it, but it's up to you. But you should do it as a volunteer. And we know that volunteers are much more committed to mitzvot. When you volunteer, you feel, you know, it's me doing it. And we need that feeling. When we're obligated to do something, we feel it. We don't do it the same way because I have to do it, right? We want people to do their obligations voluntarily. So that's a little bit, that's accepting the mitzvot. It's sort of going a step further than the Rambam. The Rambam says we give tzedakah because it's the right thing to do. It's the idea that I do it not, well, I guess it's the same idea as the Rambam. The Rambam was talking more on the negative mitzvot, but here we're talking on the positive mitzvot, to do it because it's the right thing to do. Do it as a volunteer. Okay, so that's, I don't know if anybody has any questions, they can put it in the chat box, but let's just quickly sort of review what we discussed. That the Gemara presents a machloket. The Nasa v'Nishma is clearly in the Chumash. That's a pasuk in Chumash. That Jewish people were forced is not in the Chumash. That's also what we didn't point out. Not in the Chumash. It's a rabbinic taking the verse out of its context, tachtidar, because it's a little bit of a strange word, and interpreting that tachat, we underneath the mountain, and then the Gemara sort of made up, whatever word you want to use, came up with this idea, Chazal came up with this idea that the Torah had to be forced, even though that's not in Torah. Nasev, because Nasev and Ishma, it's in the Torah, but it's not directly related to the Aseret that he brought. The Gemara is not bothered by this contradiction. We live with contradictions. Sometimes we do want to accept it. Sometimes we don't want to accept it. Some people want to accept it. Other people don't want to accept it. But we saw Tosfot itself said originally, yeah, of course, we're all excited. But then we have to do the hard work. Lots of people volunteer at the beginning of a project. But when the project gets a little tough, they stop. Torah, that's great. Uh-oh, a thunder, lightning, to care too much. This is not for me. We won't accept it. The Tanchuma is, I think, a much more powerful explanation because the Tosfot explanation is historical. What happened historically, the Tanchuma's explanation is for all time, that what God says, we're willing to accept towards God, and it's easier. That's a, the Tanchuma understands it. What the rabbis say, the rabbis, first of all, they make our life much more difficult. That's what it is in the Tanchuma. They add on cheeseburgers, all these things that are not in the Torah that we can't do. And also, who are they? What do you mean they're going to overrule God? God comes out and he says, this Rabbi Elazar is right. And the rabbis say, yeah, we don't care. God, lo b'shamayim, you gave us the Torah, you have no say. So that the people aren't willing to accept such an idea. But that's the rabbinic idea. And then we saw the beautiful Rashi that by Deber Elohim Moshe Lemor, there was a response he certainly brought. What was the response? Hain, love, love. Rashi only quotes half the Mechilta. And the way Rav Soloveitchik explains the argument, because the Mechilta is arguing, why don't we not steal? Because, of course, how could we steal? Or, all right, God, if you say so, we have to listen to you. You know, I like to do sleazy business practices, but if God, you say no, I won't. And then we picked up on the Rambam, who picks up on this theme and makes the distinction between logical mitzvot or rational mitzvot, whatever you want to call them, mitzvot that we don't need a Torah for, don't steal, don't murder. But those we should accept willingly, because the goal of the Torah is not to keep the Torah. The goal of the Torah is to be better people. That's the ultimate goal, not to keep the mitzvah, because it says so, to be better people. But when it comes to the mitzvah, we would have never thought of on our own. Like Shatnez and Kashrut and the Rambam says, like Arayot, including many, I wouldn't say all, many of the sexual sins, the Rambam says, there's no reason inherently to think that's immoral, anything wrong. Person can be the greatest person in the world who doesn't keep kosher. He's not observing his religious obligation that we feel should be observed, but he can be a wonderful person, can be a great person. So that's the Rambam's distinction. Then we saw the same idea in the mitzvah of Tzedakah, how the Torah, I'll explain, the Torah itself alludes to this. So we should accept the Torah. The most important thing is to do the Torah. Whether view you like the Rambam, they're all the views you want, that it's better to accept everything because you have to, everything because you want to split it, divide it, whatever. So we should keep the Torah. We should all be zocha that if we keep the Torah, that we should have the blessings of the Torah, of good health. That's the main blessing of the Torah. The Torah doesn't tell us to bless us because Olam Haba, that's not the interest of the Torah. The Torah's interest is in this world, Ani Hashem Rofecha, that we should have through the Kiyum HaTorah, we should get the blessings of God in this world, and Bimheira, that good health and long life and brachot and wealth, it's also a wonderful, important blessing, and also very important today with the economic upheaval in the world. So I want to wish everybody a Chag Sameach. We're going to start up. I'll send out the schedule. We're going to do a new registration, just sort of a new system for the post-Shavuot thing. So everybody, you just have to register once for all the classes. Please God, I'll probably send it out probably Sunday. And we're going to start Monday with classes. Some of them will only start next week. Some will start this upcoming week. And I'm hoping to hear any ideas that somebody might have. If any speakers, one of the speakers we're having was given to us by somebody who's online, comes to all our classes, and she wrote me an email, why don't you invite this person? I'd heard of her, I looked it in, and she's going to be giving a class soon, so I'm very happy to hear any suggestions you might have. There's a lot of Torah to learn. We have, we're not going to do 24/7, but there's lots to do. So everybody, every Chag Sameach, and hope you learned something, you found it meaningful, and all the best, and enjoy all the cake and the milkshakes, the fleishiks, whatever you're eating, as long as it's kosher, whether you want to keep kosher or you don't want to keep kosher. Chag Sameach, everybody.